This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So now we've got less to celebrate when we think about South African children, particularly in rural areas, and the conditions in which they're expected to study and concentrate in at school. So pit latrines are really a blemish, a blight on the conscience of this country. And despite all the investments that have been made into sanitation and potable water across the country, particularly because historically many rural communities in particular didn't have these services at all, there seems to be somewhat of a blind spot when we're talking about schools in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And we know of that terrible, terrible story in 2014 when a young Michael Komape, a five-year-old child, fell into a pit toilet at his school and drowned. Obviously an untimely death. It sparked national outrage across the country and demands for better sanitation for children. And we shouldn't even be demanding better sanitation. If you look at the UN's blueprint on what are sustainable development goals, access to clean, potable water is SDG number 6. It is a fundamental human right, but one that remains elusive for people, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape. Elizabeth, is it Biney or Binney, is a researcher for Equal Education, and she joins us now. Elizabeth, how do I pronounce your last name?
Biney, good morning.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming through. We're joined by Elizabeth Biney, a researcher at Equal Education. So since that moment of national outrage in 2014, have there been significant improvements in providing better quality water, sanitation and potable flush toilets in our schools in South Africa?
Well, obviously, something has been done, right? There's been some progress. But if we look at the progress we've had against or versus the backlog or the sheer need for proper infrastructure, the progress is literally a drop in the ocean. So it does not match the need. So a lot of investment and a lot of effort has been put into providing school infrastructure, but what we are seeing is that the need or the backlog far exceeds the progress that we are making. So government is acting very slowly on the replacing or providing this vital infrastructure to schools, which means that as they are moving at that snail pace, we are also getting emerging problems. So new conditions are coming across. So it is difficult to even get rid of the backlog, let alone address the current need or the emerging needs that are coming into the sector. So we have a persistent crisis. We are taking one step forward and literally it looks like six steps back because the sheer need is so big.
So this is a phenomenon particularly in, and I don't want to use the word phenomenon, I think it's not, and I'm using the wrong English, but this is a real problem, particularly in the Eastern Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal. Why is that?
So when you look at the infrastructure crisis, our mostly rural provinces, which, you know, we label as mostly rural because they are relatively underdeveloped compared to your Gauteng and your Western Cape. So when you look at your Eastern Cape, your KwaZulu-Natal, your Limpopo, they account for the bulk of the infrastructure backlog in the country. And this has historical sort of backing, but it's also because very little is done there, or the conditions or the focus of the education department are not always aligned to what needs to be done. So we have, they account for the bulk of the problem, but they are also very problematic entities or problematic departments. So while we are trying to funnel resources and channel funds into these provinces to address the problem that they have, we also see that the bulk of the mismanagement and lack of will also fits in those departments as well. So we have historical background or historical context to consider in that during the apartheid and the special apartheid that we have, these provinces were given less focus and they were left to, they were neglected in all intents and purposes. So schools in these provinces have a dire need for proper infrastructure upgrades and development. But also the education departments in these provinces are notorious in that they are very problematic. We have a lot of corruption, irregular expenditures. We have a lot of incapacity and mismanagement. So the problem is twofold. While we are trying to address this problem, the human resources, the political will, the focus that is needed is not always there to address this historical backlog that is unfortunately a historical context or a historical development.
Yeah, okay. So this is a hangover from the apartheid era and Bantustans where, you know, people were literally left to their own devices in terms of what separate development looks like. And these are the repercussions, is what you're saying. However, you know, I talk of that tragic, tragic incident involving the little Michael Komape. But prior to that, actually, the Minister of Basic Education in November of 2013, so a year earlier, had promulgated regulations related to just basic uniform standards for public school infrastructure. So they, I have to assume that they'd seen the scale of the problem, they'd found it untenable, and they'd come up with a system to say there needs to be a way in which the building of a school complies with particular building and quality standards, whether you're in Mpumalanga or Cape Town or the Eastern Cape or Gauteng. So they'd already taken these steps even before this very, very tragic incident. But it's not translating. Why?
So we must understand that even the introduction of that school infrastructure norms and standards, it did not come up. It did not mushroom overnight. It was as a result of tireless advocacy by our members. It involved litigation, going to court and forcing the minister to actually have a critical look and do something about the conditions and infrastructure crisis in the sector, right? So government has historically been reluctant to do anything aggressive about these conditions. So the infrastructure law came about because the people on the ground were crying and they refused to budge on this matter. Now, what we also need to understand is that the mere fact that there's a law doesn't automatically translate into, you know, practical or reality. There needs to be something done. We need to apply the law. We need to work at it. So the law being introduced in 2013 was a victory in itself in that now we had something to hold the government accountable and to monitor their progress against. So the issue now that we are facing is that, yes, this is this fantastic law and it is important and it promises a lot of great things, but government's appetite or willingness or political will to actually go and work at it to provide the conditions that they have committed themselves into this law is not materializing. We are seeing a really slow, lackadaisical approach to providing infrastructure. Some of their data does not make any sense. It contradicts each other. So without the proper foundation and without a proper view of what the problem really is and how it looks, they will be working against a moving target, or they'll be shooting in the dark. So one day there's like 5 schools, the next year there's like 20 schools. We don't know which is which because they haven't done the due diligence of getting accurate, reliable data on the sheer need or the sheer extent of the problem. So they are planning against targets that we don't know where they're getting from. So it is very difficult for schools to get that relief that they're asking for because the priorities are not always right or the government is not putting in the right effort and energy.
Can I just ask a question? And I don't mean to be flippant. It's a genuine question on my part. we're just talking about putting up toilets and basins, right?
Mm.
From where I'm standing, that's a pretty simple task. It shouldn't be so hard. It shouldn't be that we are having huge conversations around budgeting and engineering and planning, when what we're just asking for is that each school should just have a few flush toilets and basins.
And that's exactly right, because what we are dealing with is the sheer minimum or the sheer basic. But everything with this department seems to be a struggle or a fight. So we can't even be thinking about science laboratories or internet connection or those higher order needs, because we are still fighting the bare minimum, which is dignified toilet in schools. So the problem is that we seem to be talking to a deaf ear, or we are shouting at people who are not willing to hear. We are not sure what the problem exactly is, but we get promises, we get placated with, you know, little hearings here and there, and nothing ever gets done. And while we are waiting, there are micro comapes that are losing their futures. And that's, you know, that is an example of many learners or many children that we go unseen or go unheard of. That is one example of a failure on the government. And that one example is one too many.
Mm. It really is. We're in conversation with Elizabeth Biney, a researcher for Equal Education. Elizabeth, we're going to take a short break just to catch a breath. When we come back, perhaps you can give us an audit of the scale of the problem from where you're standing. How many schools are we talking about? And if it's not schools, how many school children are being subject to these very, very poor conditions?
Tackling the challenges of our time, one conversation at a time. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
And we're tackling a challenge that shouldn't even be a challenge in 2022, something so deplorable that small school children could fall into pit latrines because schools in many rural parts of South Africa just don't have proper flush toilets and basins. And when we're asking why is this still an issue in the post-apartheid era, we're told it's not for lack of trying, it's not for lack of proper planning, but it's because petitions fall on deaf ears, says Elizabeth Biney, a researcher with Equal Education. Elizabeth, you said, you know, we're trying to calibrate how wide is the problem. We know it's serious, we know it's dire. Do we know numbers?
Well, the department itself actually collects data on this issue, but obviously, as I've alluded to, the data is not always reliable or accurate, because it does not truly reflect the living conditions or the actual conditions of school. But even if we go according to the department statistics alone, right, which are conservative at best, we are made to understand that about 22% of South African schools have pit toilets on their premises, right? So that means that in these schools, they might have other forms of sanitation, but pit toilets, which is completely banned when the norms were introduced in 2013, it was something that was completely banned. It was illegal, but they still exist. In this, in 2,130 of these schools, pit toilets is the only sanitation they know, the only form of toilets they know. They don't know what a flushing toilet looks like, or they have never like seen one on their premises or used one. And that alone, it's illegal, it is a contravention of the law, it is an abuse of their constitutional rights, because if pit toilets have been banned, these 2,000 schools that only rely on pit toilets, plain pit toilets as the only form of sanitation, are basically being violated on a daily basis. These learners are going to school and their parents are hoping that they will come back whole alive. You know, we never know what is going to happen. There could be an accident, something as simple as the ground caving in, and then we have lost a future there. So the government itself knows this information, because they are providing this information, this statistics to us. And we are even saying that when we go on school visits, the conditions are far worse than what they are reported, because we see situations that are way worse than what the national statistics is trying to capture. So the conditions, the crisis might be bigger than we actually know it to be, because the information that we are gathering is not not accurate enough. It's not reflecting the lived realities of many schools in rural provinces.
But it provides some kind of a picture. And as you're saying, it's data collected by the state. And so if the state can't make the intervention on their own data, then what's the recourse? What about school governing bodies? Let me just ask that question. And I know you'll say, don't be naive, Lerato, school governing bodies in rural schools. But for many urban schools, that's also part of the solution. When the government has gaps, then the community steps in.
See, the problem with trying to bridge gaps that the state is creating, or failures on this on the part of the state, is that school governing bodies have to be equipped, empowered, and they have to have the right resources to bridge those gaps. These communities that we are talking about, like, they're literally going on bare minimum. Sanitation is not the only problem that they are facing. We have challenges in LTSM, in governance, from like the very top to the very bottom. There are challenges, right? So we can't expect school governing bodies to bridge gaps that they can't actually, they're not equipped to. The schools that you're comparing them to are schools that are affluent, or they're in affluent neighborhoods. They probably charge fees, so they have extra resources to be able to bridge those gaps. When we are talking about impoverished or working class communities, you have mostly quintile 1 to 3, which are non-fee paying. These are your most critical schools, because they service what is called poorer communities.
Right.
School governing bodies don't have the resources to be able to meet or bridge government failures, right? So we have a challenge in that aspect as well. And in all honesty, we cannot also put the burden on school governing bodies, because that is not their mandated responsibility. The constitutional mandate or duty is on government, the Department of Education and Provincial Education Department. They cannot pass the buck on others.
Yeah, and it's their constitutional responsibility to provide the infrastructure to make the school environment safe, I guess.
Yes.
Okay. And then what about the distinctions between national and provincial and local government? Because sometimes being able to meet the requirements of an integrated development program is really about the separation of these powers. So national government comes up with the strategy, this regulation we're talking about. Provincial government then must do this audit. And then locally, the municipalities must make sure that they actually build those toilets.
So what we need to understand is that the school infrastructure provisioning mandate lies with education departments, right? How they deliver on that mandate is up to them. Yes, they are required to coordinate with other relevant government departments and service providers to be able to provide these services. But it is not up to those other departments to make sure that the Department of Education is fulfilling its legal mandate to school communities. So if there needs to be a toilet and the neighborhood that the school is situated cannot afford or cannot house a flushing toilet, it is up to the department to investigate alternative solutions to be able to provide safe and adequate toilets in conjunction or in coordination with other departments like the public works or what have you. But they cannot use the lack of support from other departments as an excuse to fulfill their legal moral mandate to school communities.
And finally, very briefly, Elizabeth, is there any hope? You know, when you look at this minimum norms and standards, is there anything in it that you look at and say, okay, there is the prospect for getting things right?
There is hope. The situation is not, the battle is not all lost, right? So as I was saying earlier, the political will, the agency with which the situation requires needs to be there. And that is what we are trying to get government to realize, that we need to move at a faster pace. We need to take these matters seriously. We need to put more energy and concerted effort into addressing the situation, because the resources are there. If the political will matches the resources and the support and the focus that we are looking for, then the situation can be remedied. It is not all hope is not lost.
Thank you so much for your time. And the reason we're having this conversation with Elizabeth Biney is because tomorrow, the 29th of November, will be the 9th anniversary of this regulation, the minimums, norms and standards regulations on public infrastructure in schools. And so almost 10 years later, we should not be having these incidents. But remember these names, please, so that they're not forgotten. These little children, Michael Komape, Siyamthanda Mthunu, Lumka Mqeta. These are children who have died drowning in pit latrines in their schools. And this year, a three-year-old who is unnamed for public record drowned in a pit latrine in an unregistered nursery school. So two problems there, the infrastructure and just even the certification of that institution for early childhood development. Let us not tolerate these kinds of things for the sake of our children.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.